Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into the podcast today, I would like to say to everybody listening, please do leave us reviews in your chosen podcast player and do give us some feedback because that will help us decide on what we're going to be talking about on the podcast going forward. We get some great comments, so please do keep those going. For today's podcast, we are joined kindly once more by Alan Green. Alan, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, John. Good to be back.
So we've been speaking over the past year, Alan, in some detail about inflation. It's something that has been a main theme of this year, and it's very hard to get away from the subject. And this morning, it is going to be something that we have to touch on, given the huge reading that we've seen in the UK inflation data for October, 4.2%. That's the highest for some 10 years. We spoke very recently about the Bank of England and whether they bottled the last rate hike. At the time, they said they wanted to get a little bit more in the way of data from the UK economy. They wanted to see, in particular, what the jobs market was doing. Yesterday, we had an instalment of jobs data from the UK, which showed that the economy created 160,000 jobs last month and record highs for job adverts. So that does suggest a very healthy jobs market out there. And this data today, you know, 4.2% in inflation. It's very difficult now to see how the Bank of England cannot raise rates in their next meeting in December. But Alan, let's now just talk about the market impact. First of all, what we're seeing today, and then let's just move on after that and look at what this means, you know, in particular for the FTSE 100 and some of the shares there. I mean, initial reaction today in markets, we're seeing yields, 10-year UK government gilts go up to 1%. We've seen an increase in the pound, not so much against the dollar, because the dollar has actually been on strong run yesterday, over the last few weeks. So that it did get out some gains against the dollar. But what's quite interesting is the pound against the euro. We're coming up to the highest levels for about a year now on the GBP euro rate. And of course, we've seen some weakness in the FTSE 100 there, Alan. I mean, in your opinion, when we're looking at the FTSE 100, there has been an inverse relationship, which has been, you know, particularly evident since Brexit and the sharp movements that we've seen there. You know, over the last, you know, three or so months, we've seen a weakening in the pound and at the same time a strengthening in the FTSE 100. You know, we're approaching, not quite there, but approaching pre-pandemic highs, which are just above 7,400. I mean, how much does this inflation data put that at risk in terms of moving above those pre-pandemic highs if we see a rate hike cycle to fight inflation, which then brings back into this back into play this inverse relationship between the pound and the FTSE 100?
It's a complex conundrum, isn't it? And we've got this cocktail of factors all vying and weighing in their own way on the fortunes of the FTSE 100 going forward. Of course, the FTSE 100 is comprised chiefly of dollar earners. So all the while there's a strong dollar, we're going to see we're going to see that as the key driver, certainly behind the resource and the commodity stocks on the index. When we come to inflation, as you say, we had strong jobs numbers yesterday, indicating that the end of the furlough schemes and the job losses may not be as severe as was expected, although I still suspect that has a number of months to play out. You know, we're not going to see the impact of that immediately, but certainly the early signs are good. So it's played into the argument for raising interest rates, and whether it's a quarter of 1% to start with or how the Bank of England approaches. Clearly, they've got to tackle inflation, so interest rates is one of the tools at their disposal to do that. But of course, you know, whilst we have higher food prices on the one hand, higher sort of food and energy prices on the one hand, if the interest rates go up, then of course borrowing costs go up. So the householder still ends up paying largely the same. In fact, the net result is they're still paying out more money. So it's really the bank has to form a judgment based on on how the householders will be least impacted going forward. And I suspect that pressure will be put on some of the lenders as well to ensure that if people are in trouble, that they can restructure accordingly and effectively to ensure they can continue to cover their borrowings. But for stocks, obviously, the higher interest rates are going to drive the financials, particularly the banks, and we're already seeing strength in that sector over the past little while. But it's a difficult situation to manage, and I suspect that a move by the Bank of England will be very cautious. That they have to act now. You know, 4.2% inflation is very worrying indeed, and the trend seems to be up, so they're going to have to act. But I don't believe they'll come straight in with a half or even a 1% rate hike. I think it'll be 0.25% to start with, and then we'll build slowly from there and just see how the medicine's working.
Yes, I think anything above 0.25% would be a big surprise to the market and probably cause huge amounts of volatility. But you did pick up on some sectors there in the financials, and you know that is one of the companies looking this morning that have been beneficiaries from this news. Looking at the likes of Lloyds and Barclays and NatWest Group, all higher. Whereas if we're looking at some of the house builders, for example, they're weaker. And this is really the opposite of what we saw after the last rate hike decision, where they decided not to hike rates, that we saw weakness in the banks and strength in the house builders as people were pricing in what higher rates would do for these different sectors. I mean, when you're looking now at the market, Alan, do you really feel that it's a stock picker's market in as far as, you know, we've got this inverse relationship between the pound and the FTSE 100, and that's going to move the index there in a big way if we see sharp moves in the pound. So is it now a time to really set out which sectors you want to be exposed to and really start preparing for higher rates? Or do you think this is something that the market will take in its stride? Yes, we're seeing a bit of a reaction today, but by the time December comes around, it's not going to be anything new. It's going to be priced in, and we start to see people then look towards the growth story as opposed to what's happening with prices.
I think that's very much the case. You know, whilst the inflation figures are extremely worrying for the markets, certainly the bank, I think the Bank of England will respond, and it's whether that inflation rate is going to be sustained. And as we're at this time of year in the Northern Hemisphere, clearly this is a time of year when energy prices really do come into focus because of the cold months. So it could just be a seasonal factor, one that will become less reliant on in time, also driven by Brexit, of course. So you've got those factors to take into account too. But I suspect these are short-term issues rather than systemic long-term issues. And I think a move by a firm move by the Bank of England and some clear messaging, I think, will probably keep maintain the status quo. And we've really got a conundrum for the FTSE 100, where if interest rates increase, the financials will be driven, but growth stocks will be pushed to one side if interest rates are increased. Then of course we've got the financials being driven. If interest rates aren't increased, then of course the growth stock opportunities still exist. But then of course there's going to be the focus on the impact it's going to have on householders, and also long term whether some of those first time buyers will be tempted into the market, or whether their finances will be impacted accordingly. So it could, higher interest rates longer term could severely impact on the housing market too. So there's all those factors to take into account.
Yes, and as you mentioned there, I think what's going to be quite important is the messaging side of things. I mean, this is something that really came into play with some of the ECB presidents years ago. Jean-Claude Trichet and Draghi were, you know, seen to be the ones that could move markets by the hints that they gave on what they were going to do. And I think that's going to be particularly important for the Bank of England going forward, because it looks as though they're going to have to hike rates. But after that, it's all about the perception, the market perception of what they do and how quickly they hike rates, if they need to hike rates further in the immediate future.
It's at times like this that we need to see a bit of leadership from the Bank of England and firm decision making and clear policies and as I say, leadership, because I think that will send the right signal to the markets and reassure investors. And it's when we have these periods of uncertainty that will they, won't they? That's the worst time for markets and investors, both retail and institutional.
Indeed. So mentioning just then stock picking, now let's move on to the companies that we're going to discuss today. And, you know, these are all ones that I'm sure people that are into stock picking and looking at fundamentals of stocks would have had a look at some time in these first two FTSE 100 companies. And I think the first one to start with, Alan, is Vodafone. For many, many years, this was a real household name in terms of a company to invest in for income. It's obviously gone through major change in the last decades, and just in the last year or so, it's been quite a torrid time for investors. But we did have an update from them yesterday, Alan, up around 5%. So that was taken very well by the markets. It's off slightly today, but what did that report look like?
Well, the company's actually starting to turn things around, and again, of course, Vodafone is a cornerstone for many an investor's portfolio, and of course, institutions as well. It's been very much a darling in that regard because, of course, it's got a very healthy dividend yield, nearly 7%. So, just holding the stock alone, you're going to earn 7%, and if you can pick up the stock, I mean, we're just off year to date lows now. At 115 pence, stock has been down to 106, and of course, a while ago it was down below a pound. So the stock's off slightly today, but with that dividend yield, it's very popular for investors, and it's certainly if you wanted a reliable cornerstone, this would be the stock to have, and I still very much believe that, but. Of course, when you become a company the size of Vodafone, and let's not forget we've got a 31 billion market cap, with that dividend yield, it's very hard to change direction and steer the super tanker in another direction. You know, it turns very slowly, it's very hard to. For the company to suddenly change its earnings or improve profits massively. But it's actually increased its free cash flow forecast. First half earnings grew faster than expected. And on the back of that, the company raised full year earnings guidance to 15.2 billion euros from 15 billion. You know, so that's a sizable increase given the sort of money that Vodafone turns over, and it's sort of commercial momentum. driven in particular by a very strong performance in Germany, which is the company's largest market. So the chief exec, Nick Reed, said that that the numbers had given the company solid commercial momentum. Also, it also saw a good performance in Africa as well as other European countries. Overall, it's seeing an increase in handset sales, recovering handset sales after COVID, and the outlook is pretty strong for the group. In some areas, it's the company's consolidating, and it's seeing post COVID some problems in some markets, but not on the overall performance. And I think that's the thing with Vodafone. It can experience real problems in one market, but due to the sheer size and size of the operation and complexity of the operation, the overall performance, you'll barely see a dent in that performance, provided its other markets perform, which they have done in this case. So the company is always seeking to fine-tune costs and improve profitability, and it's doing so selling down and looking at merging some of its operations, such as Vantage Towers, for instance, where it's looking to sell down a controlling stake, and of course bring more money to the company. But overall, you know, at this juncture, given that we're just off the year lows to date, it looks to be a good entry point. And with that near 7% dividend yield, what's not to like?
Yes, indeed. I mean, especially looking at where the share price is now and the dividend that you mentioned there, if they really are on a path to change what they've been doing over the last couple of years, it could present some value there. I mean, just some one point there on the costs, Alan. You know, with a company of this size, it's very difficult to see higher revenue figures. You know, is it really a case of for Vodafone to generate more profit, the focus really has to be on restructuring, you know, their cost base, looking at efficiencies, as opposed to, you know, trying to look for new markets and increase their footprint, because they're obviously so big that now the focus needs to be on, you know, decreasing the cost there to see the profits go up.
Yeah, that's partly the case. So, well, it's managing both, really. But I mean, let's not forget, you know, the company still managed to grow overall revenues by 5% in the first half, up to €22.5 million from €21.5 billion previously. So the overall performance, you've still increased by nearly €1 billion, which is, that's no mean achievement, you know. That's all the markets combined together, coupled with the documented problems in some of the markets, where some of the providers are downselling and some of the providers in markets are merging together to try and save costs and improve economies of scale. But I mean, the outlook's good. The outlook's strong. They are downselling these assets, so they look capable with the markets recovering after COVID. They look capable of certainly hitting top end of forecast for the year and possibly even exceeding those going forward. So you know, for the first time possibly in a long time, Vodafone actually offers some decent capital growth potential. And if you can, you know, lock in some capital growth by getting in at this level and it returns to year highs, you've still got that 7% dividend to boot. So, you know, it's a good entry point.
Indeed. And certainly going to be one that's going to be of interest to investors looking for income, as you mentioned. And, you know, with that potential of capital appreciation, certainly an interesting prospect at this point in time. So, Alan, now let's move on to the second company that we're going to discuss today, and that's SSC. Reported this morning, shares are off 4%, but it seems that, you know, the underlying performance of the business and what they're doing in terms of their strategy isn't as negative as what the share price is doing today.
No, it's had a very strong year, actually. I mean, despite COVID, I mean, since the since this time last year, shares were trading, you know, they hit a low in March of £12.80, and they're now trading £15.78, having been as high as just under £17 a share. And of course, it's all about renewals, renewable energy for the company. And so a pundit sort of commented this morning that they'd have more money had that had made more money had the wind blown harder. So it's prophetic in a sense, because it actually illustrates the challenges that renewable energy companies face. You know, you need the wind to blow, or you need the water to flow in order to continue generating the electricity. So it's a consideration, you know, for the future. If there is major climate change, and perhaps a site where traditionally there was loads of wind, suddenly stops blowing, then you're in deep trouble. But nonetheless, this is still a strong performance. Of course, SSE sold down its household energy and supply services company beginning of last year. So unlike many of the energy players, it doesn't have the exposure to the energy crisis that's currently seen several of the smaller energy players go into administration. So it's also the moves have into renewable energy, and the additional $12.5 billion that it's investing into the sector in the coming years has appeased Elliott, which is an activist investor, and Elliott's of course pushing for SSE to separate its renewables business from its core energy core grid business, and of course on the basis that if it spins off its renewables, then arguably you could see a much higher a rating. Whether that's a sensible move, Elliott believes so, is remains to be seen. But I suspect, given that SSE would then become susceptible to whether the wind blows or not, it might be an idea to keep the entities combined. But that's just an opinion formed from looking at the commentary today. Nonetheless, the company has set its stall out very clearly going forward. It's making this investment into renewables, and you know the share price performance on the year has been pretty fantastic. If you bought in, as I say, at £12.80 back in March, you'd be sitting pretty now. And once again, this is a great dividend payer. So you learn a 5% dividend from the company going forward. I think this company is managing itself very well, and regardless of the pressure from its activist investor, Elliott, I think it continues to be run very well. And also there's a very solid outlook for the group too.
So Alan, of course, available to UK investors, there's a range of funds, investment trusts, and of course, you know, various different companies, in the small cap arena. But in your view, does SSE present the best opportunity to UK investors that are looking for a blue chip company operating in the renewable energy sector?
I think it probably does, simply because of its size, and also it's made the commitment. You know, we've got this $12.5 billion strategic investment. It's also announced today it's a standalone net zero acceleration program to accelerate clean energy or growth in clean energy provision. So that's very solid. But it also does have the links, and a lot of its revenue is driven from the grid business, you know, which is the more traditional energy business, which also is a solid revenue generator too. So it's a bit of a conundrum, because if it does spin off the clean energy business, then arguably could trade on a higher rating, and obviously Elliott, being an activist investor, would be pleased with that, and I'm sure other shareholders might be too. But you open up these other risks too. So when we're looking for investments, we're looking for safe investments. You know, investments to cornerstone your portfolio with. You know, like Vodafone in another sector, it's a good dividend payer. So I would say that probably this company is on the right track. You know, it's going to be one of the biggest players in renewables in the coming years. I think the business currently is being run very well by the management team. So I don't see really that too much needs to change.
Indeed. And I think the reason why we're seeing shares down today is because they're actually delivering on their strategy. When you start to see, obviously, it doesn't sound right from saying that, but you know, obviously, you have the activist investor in Elliott trying to break up the group and get it to sell its renewables business. By doing that, it would unlock some value there for shareholders in the short term in terms of cash returns. So I think what we're seeing today is disappointment from the market that potential cash from the renewables business isn't going to be coming in to SSE in the short term, and they're actually going to carry on as one group. So those looking for a short-term trade, disappointed, but I'm sure long-term holders of SSE will be very pleased with what they're seeing today. And I think that's being reflected in the share price.
I think there are some other factors there too. Of course, with this pledge and commitment going forward, the company's also said that it's going to be paying a dividend of at least £3.50 per share across the next 5 years, with attractive annual growth of at least 5% to March 2026, and that's with the combined entity. So I think, you know, that ticks a lot of boxes for investors, and it would be interesting to see what happens if that actually comes to a vote at the AGM. But you know, I think you've got to give SSE the benefit of the doubt. What they're doing is working, and it's working as a combined entity. And the thing is with spin-offs, you often get spin-offs when one division is underperforming. It's like Johnson & Johnson, of course, announced it was going to spin off its consumer healthcare arm. I think there was rationale to do that because you've got a lot of underperforming businesses there. With SSE, it's got good performance both from its renewables and its core business. So the argument is there. You know, if shareholders are going to continue to receive this dividend in the coming years, if it ain't broke, why change it?
Indeed. I have to agree with that. It seems to be working. And, you know, why upset the apple cart there with things? Yeah. So definitely going to be an interesting company to watch, and certainly a bellwether for renewable energy here in the UK. So I'm sure that's going to be one that we discuss again on the podcast in the future. So, Alan, now let's move on to the last company that we're going to discuss today. And again, one that we have been through in some detail on the podcast previously, because it is a junior company in the AIM market, which is producing a strong level of news due to the operation. And the latest, I believe, Alan, is the announcement of a funding round, meaning they're very well funded to go forward from here. That's Blencow Resources. What's been happening there?
Okay. Yeah, Blencow Resources is it's obviously a micro cap compared to the companies we've been talking about. Shares currently trading at 5.3p. So they've along with other peer group micro cap mining companies, they have slid this year, but currently with a market cap of 6.5 million, trade as high as 9.5p on the year, as low as 5p, so just off the year lows now. But with bolstered cash reserves, they've just in an oversubscribed fundraise raised 2 million sterling. Also includes subscriptions of 75,000 from the company directors and the CEO. And of course, Blencow is all about a huge graphite resource in Uganda. This is the Orion Cross Graphite Project, 100% owned by the company. And over the past year, the company has been undertaking work in the area. Now, this is, make no mistake, this is a huge region. It's 2,000 square miles. It's a vast territory. And the company announced a maiden JORC resource estimate of 16.3 million tons of graphite back in April this year. And that, of course, is a great step forward for the group. But that the area from which that JORC estimate is derived from is less than 1% of the entire prospect area for Orem Cross. So that's highly significant. Now, this is high-grade graphite, and of course, graphite has a multitude of applications, but of course, is going to be key to the EV and battery industry as we go forward. Certainly in the lithium-ion batteries, graphite makes up more than 40% of the constituent parts, so it's key in that. And it has a raft of industrial applications, both in steel mills, in use in environments where flame retardant materials are required, and a whole raft of other applications. So it's hugely important. So the group on September the 29th announced a preliminary economic assessment of the Orem Cross project. And, you know, bear in mind, this is just the area that we talked about, which is less than 1% of the entire license area for Orem Cross. So the PEA established what a net present value for the stuff in the ground of $317 million. If a mine were to be built there, there'd be a 13-year mine life. And the extraction costs would be ultra low, for the simple reason that you can literally walk on the ground there and the bits of graphite are sticking out of the ground. So you could arguably drive across with a tractor and a rake and rake a load of the stuff out of the ground. So, of course, from that, you need to process it and all the rest of it. And the PEA establishes operating costs at roughly $498 per ton. And, of course, it sells for an awful lot more than that. Generating some 40 million per annum EBITDA just from that one place. That's assuming that the graphite sells for just over $1,000 per ton. So over the initial 13 years, that could generate as much as $351 million just from that small area. So on the back of that, the company's raised $2 million. It's now fully funded through to completion of the next phase, which is, of course, the pre-feasibility study. And that looks at the feasibility study provides the assessment of the land, of the cost of building a plant there, extracting the material, mining it, getting it ready for market, getting it to market, that's via road, via ship, and the entire process. And obviously, all the time this is happening, the outlook for the graphite market is increasing in strength. We're seeing greater demand than ever for electric cars, for batteries, gigafactories springing up all over the place. And the company said that in the short term, it's going to update the JORC resource. So we're going to see a JORC resource from a slightly increased area. And of course, the pre-feasibility study will be ready next summer. And at that point, you know, we can then look to we can then set down a timeline for actually getting the mine built and getting estimates as to when production can actually start. So that's a really exciting step forward. Already, the company are in conversations with major global corporates for takeoff agreements because, of course, it'll be key going forward. And what often happens is when we get to a PA round or a PA study completion, the corporates move in, the takeoff deals are set up, so those corporates get in early to make sure that they are first in the queue to ensure uptake of the product. So here we are, 6.5 million market cap, fully funded through to the completion of PFS. I think we're going to see a very strong year for Blencow next year, and the company, I'm sure once the PFS is underway, we'll be trading at much higher multiples than we're currently seeing at the moment.
Indeed, market cap of 6.5 million, just raised 2 million. That suggests, what they have is only worth 4.5 in terms of the assets there, which seems rather low.
Well, that's 4.5 million against an NPV number of $317 million. So, there's going to be some convergence or a move by the company valuation towards that number or closer to that number at some point, for sure.
I mean, what do you think the medium term looks like for Blencow, Alan? I mean, is this a company that you feel the board wants to take through to production and really grow the asset there as a company, or do you think this is something that then becomes, you know, a potential target for other players there in the market? I mean, you know, to get this going, they're going to have to bring in, you know, other players in terms of, you know, sort of JVs and such like to get the production online. I mean, where do you think it goes in the medium term?
Very much so. I mean, that's what happens. Of course, we see this. You know, this is the strategy that the microcap mining companies are engaged in that they take an asset through, they develop it through to completion of the PFS. And often before that point, you know, the data that's already out there in the public domain is good enough for some of the majors to get involved. And, you know, we saw, you know, a year or so ago with Greatland Gold in Australia, with the Havieron mine, Newcrest Mining came in you know, Greatland Gold retained a 35% stake. Market cap rocketed from 25, 30 million up to $1.5 billion at some point. So, you know, the stuff's in the ground there. There's no doubt about it. It's also a very low extraction cost too, and that's a very attractive proposition to a mining major. So I suspect that you know, we could well see interest from some of the majors as we go forward into next year. But of course, that's pure speculation. But I think the indications are there. And certainly in interviews, Mike Ralston, the director there, has indicated that, you know, they're seeing a lot of interest from third parties.
Indeed, indeed. Surely an interesting company to watch, and one that we'll be discussing again on the podcast when we get some more information and updates from them. So a recap there of the companies discussed today. First of all was Vodafone with a ticker of VOD. Just then was Blencow Resources with a ticker of BRES. And of course, in the middle was SSE with a ticker of SSE. Alan, thank you much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as I said at the beginning, a reminder, please do leave us some feedback in terms of ratings and anything that you would like us to discuss on the podcast going forward. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.